Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 14th of September. This hour of the program, should we be raising the retirement age? House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer and Republican counterpart John Boehner may feel as though they were battered this summer when they suggested that because people are living longer, Social Security retirement ages should rise. They met with quite a bit of criticism. This hour of the program, we'll be debating whether or not this may be a good idea to keep Social Security solvent for a longer period of time. We have two guests with us. The first half hour of the program, Eugene Sterley is joining us, Richard B. Fisher, Chair and Institute Fellow at the Urban Institute, a columnist under the title The Government We Deserve. He has served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Tax Analysis in the late 80s, President of the National Tax Association, Chair of the technical panel advising Social Security on its methods and assumptions, economic coordinator, and original organizer of the 1984 Treasury study that led to the Tax Reform Act of 1986. He's written a number of books, including Contemporary U.S. Tax Policy, Retooling Social Security for the 21st Century, and the list goes on. Later this hour, we'll be speaking with the Chair of Economic Policy Analysis and Director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis at the New School for Social Research, the author of When I'm 64, The Plot Against Pensions and the Plan to Save Them. I imagine we'll have a lot of phone calls on this issue, and here's how you reach us. Keep the number in mind and call in early if you know you'd like to speak to the issue. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address, if you'd like to send us one of those, is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Eugene Sterley, thank you very much for being with us.
I'm delighted to be here, Kathleen.
What do you think, 70?
Well, that's actually not the way I'd frame the issue. Basically, since the Social Security system was established in 1940, we've been providing more and more years of retirement to people for three reasons. One, they've been living longer. Two, we lowered the retirement age, the initial retirement age from 65 to 62. And then three, at least until recently, people kept retiring earlier. So the issue for me is not whether we pick some particular age. It's sort of deciding how many years of retirement makes a good old age system. And I want to be clear, one of the main reasons that I want to get at this issue is that the current system is providing less and less benefits to the really old because we're getting more and more benefits earlier and earlier in life. There's some budget consequences, too, but I just want to make it very clear that there's some consensus from left to right that this old age system has been morphing to a middle age retirement system with consequences for people who are in their 80s and often people who make their 90s and have inadequate income in retirement.
Hmm. So what do you mean when you say they have fewer benefits the older they get?
Well, suppose we agreed upon, this might be hard to do, but suppose politically we agreed upon how much we were going to raise in revenues to support the Social Security system. And Social Security is largely, despite the fact that there's a little bit of money in the trust funds, although they're going to be waning, it's largely a pay-as-you-go system. The taxes you paid in supported your parents. The taxes your kids pay in support you. And so let's suppose we had some agreement on what that tax level could be. It could be high, it could be low, you know, it could be at the current level, whatever. And then we ask how we're going to allocate those benefits. Well, if you look back, about 1965, about half of all benefits went to, about two-thirds of all benefits went to people who had 10 years or less of life expectancy. That is, they were roughly speaking in their last 10 years of life. Mm-hmm. And the other half sort of went to the people with more than that. Well, the system's evolved so much that that now only about a much smaller fraction of that amount goes to people with 10 years or less of life expectancy. And so it's going to more and more people who have 15 years and 17 years and 20 years of life expectancy left. So we're putting a smaller and smaller share of that pie to people who are really in old age.
One figure I was reading here, which is astounding, one or another partner in a couple retiring at age 62 today will probably draw benefits for about 26 years.
That's right. And actually, if you take into account that most couples have one partner who's younger than the other, the 26 number is actually an understatement. And so the question is how well prepared are people if they retire at 62, and as is likely, one or the other of them is going to make it to 90.
Mm-hmm.
There's another aspect of this retirement age issue, and I'm sure we'll get into this, and that's the healthier among us who go into these old age systems will even have more than... now, this 26 is the longer living of the two. Crudely speaking, it's males have a life expectancy at 62 of about 18, females 21, but one or the other usually has a shorter and one a longer than normal life expectancy. That's where you get to 26. But a number of us are actually healthier than average, so we get even more years of benefits. And so the question is, if we have a pile of money that we're going to put into an old age system, where do we want to put the money? And I really want to see if we can't concentrate a bit more of it in old age, even independently of the budget issues, which we should discuss. But even independently of them, I don't care whether it was Social Security was purely imbalanced, whether it had an excess, I'd still want to put more money in old age.
So what does old age mean now?
Well, to me, we'd have to agree to some political consensus. We might decide, let's give an average of 16 years or 18 years, and let's hold it there for a while, as long as the system's in balance. Let's not continually increase the number of years of retirement support that people can get. So I'll give you another set of numbers here. When Social Security was first created in 1940, the average person retired at age 68. Taking into account life expectancy, if people would retire for the same number of years today as they did then, that was about, on average, 13 or 14 years. If they'd retire for the same number of years today as they did in 1940, they'd be retiring at age 75.
Oh, my goodness.
And if you go out another, now, remember, we're mainly building a system for the future, so we're not really talking about anything for people over 55 or 60. They're not affected by this discussion anyway. If you go out another 50, 60 years, that 75 years of age would be 80. So the person who retired at 68 in 1940, by the time you get to 2060 or 2070, is equivalent to about an age 80. And so do we adjust, or should we have been adjusting for that matter, this system for the fact that we're living longer and longer, particularly now that we've got a lot fewer taxpayers to support the system because birth rates also fell.
Right. Well, how do you look at, it's a related subject, but how do you look at, you have this huge chunk of people who were born during the baby boom years. How do you make sure that those people are younger, are able to move into professions when we have so many people who are in one age group? Isn't it discriminatory in a way against younger people?
Well, there's this dilemma. I mean, we could talk about the big budget imbalances in the system, which is the fact that right now the federal government's spending about $30,000 a household, and it's collecting about $20,000 in taxes. Or we can talk about the Social Security imbalances, which are not, we're sort of collecting enough money right now to pay just about, we're collecting about as much as we're paying in benefits, but that's because we didn't really adequately plan for these baby boomers retiring. And, you know, they're just starting to retire. The first of them turned 62 in 2008. So they're just starting to fill up the ranks of the elderly, whereas before they filled up the ranks of the working age population. So basically we've got all these systems imbalanced. And so you're asking me, hey, what's fair to the young? Well, the question is, what's going to be fair to all of us? We know this current system can't survive. I mean, we can't be collecting $20,000 and paying out $30,000 as a federal government. And we can't have a Social Security system that's also got some modest imbalances going into the future. I don't want to claim Social Security is the cause of this bigger budget problem. It's not, but there's still the issue of how do we share the burden of getting this system into balance and stop borrowing everything from China to pay us everything we want.
You talked about being well prepared for retirement. A couple questions for you. How many of us rely mainly on Social Security for our retirement? Number two is what the economy has done to a lot of people's retirement plans in the last few years. And number three, do we need an additional system to supplement Social Security that would be mandatory saving for all of us?
I'm not sure I remember all three of them. Let me give you the first one.
I'm not sure I will either.
How many rely on Social Security. It's a very substantial number. I don't have the exact figure, but it might be as many as 40% or more who rely upon that Social Security as their main sources of support. I do have one number I calculated, which is even more astounding. If I add together the lifetime value of Social Security and Medicare, so I add in the value of the Medicare policies people receive, and I calculate them as, you know, what would I have in a 401k account or a individual retirement account up front at age 62 or 65 to pay for all my benefits. For the average couple today, it's about $900,000.
Woo-wee!
Now, you might say, how do you get to such a large number? Well, remember the 26 years of support we just mentioned earlier?
Right.
Take 26 years of support and multiply by a number like about $40,000 a year, which is crudely the number that it averages out to be. And I'm dodging some technical issues about how you discount and stuff like that, but it's about right. 26 years at $40,000 gets you close to $1 million in benefits. That's what the average couple has in terms of government support as they move into retirement. Four-fifths of couples do not have that much in the way of assets, in terms of all of their assets, in terms of their home, their 401k, the value of their defined benefit pension plan, you name it. So most of us are largely dependent upon government when we go into these old age systems. And then, I go further, if any of us go into nursing homes because we have some condition that has to be met, the majority of us spend down our assets within about a year. So
yes.
The majority of people, if we do happen to go into an old age home or nursing home or other a facility like this, within a year or two, we're further dependent upon Medicaid from government.
And in the last few years, those pension plans, many of them are non-existent right now. The 401ks have gone down
right.
substantially in value, so it's
right.
not looking good.
Right, and so the question for me, in a very broad sense, and when I talk about retirement age, I hate to think of it as just a Social Security issue. As I say, we've got these gigantic imbalances across sort of everything in terms of these $30,000 in spending government does and $20,000 we collect in taxes. And so if we're all going to have to bear some share of that burden, how do we bear it? And here's the tough issue that no politician can deal with, whether the Democratic or Republican, is the middle class gets most of the benefits of government, but the middle class also pays for most of government. And, you know, so far neither political party is willing to touch with a 10-foot pole the issue of can we ask the middle class to do anything? And my answer is, well, I don't see how we can solve the problem without engaging the middle class. And so now, if we're going to engage them, what do we want to do? Do we want to emphasize increasing tax rates? Do we want to emphasize cutting benefit rates? Or what I want to actually try to do is see if we can't push a little bit on getting some more work and some more saving. Because the little trick here is if people work more, what happens is you increase revenues without increasing tax rates, and those increased revenues can support a stronger benefit system, again, without increasing tax rates. Now, I grant you, the fact that they work more means they've got to give up something, right? They've got to give up some leisure. So I'm not trying to imply it's not without some cost. But if the middle class is going to bear some cost in this system, what's the best way of getting at it? And I'm thinking, well, let's start letting Social Security be a little bit more of an old age system, or at least, you know, index the retirement ages for people living longer so that we're not actually making it less and less of an old age system as we go into the future.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in. Our guest the first half hour is Eugene Sterley, Richard B. Fisher Chair and Institute Fellow at the Urban Institute, author of Retooling Social Security for the 21st Century. First call is Nancy in West Bend. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, good morning. I have lately found it increasingly offensive that people who sit at desks and have sedentary jobs want the age raised on Social Security benefits compared to those who work hard physically all of their lives and just can't do it anymore. But my question today is, I'm one of the baby boomers. Once our huge glut of population is deceased, will we not be getting much more closer again to one person for one retiree?
Good questions on both counts, Nancy. And actually, you might I think I would be there, but I agree with you about worrying about the people who work hard physically. But let me answer your second or your primary question first. The main reason we are dropping from basically about 3 workers per retiree to 2 workers per retiree is the drop in the birth rate that started about 1965. And most assumptions, and we don't know, but most assumptions are that if we keep that type of birth rate, which is we're about at replacement in the sense that there's about 2 kids for every couple or 2 kids for every woman, if you want. If it stays there, which is lower than it had been throughout our earlier history, then basically we go through about 20, 25 years now when the baby boomers retire, where we really ratchet down the number of taxpayers relative to beneficiaries, and then we sort of stay there over time. So you're right that in some sense we reach some new stability, but the new stability after, say, 20, 30, 35 is basically about where it would be by 2035. It's not back to where it doesn't go back to where it was in 2010. Now for the first part of your statement, which was sedentary people, sedentary jobs, people work hard physically, there are a lot of things that I would try to do to deal with that issue. I, for instance, would, a lot of people work hard, have physical jobs, have lower incomes. I want to beef up minimum benefits, Social Security. I actually want to give higher lifetime benefits to these people. I want to actually see if we can't figure out ways to strengthen disability. I'm very much in favor of giving people a lot more credit for their number of years of work, those people who start work at 16 and 17. In Social Security, you only get credit for 35 years, but if you start to work at 17 or 18 or 20 and you work till you're 60, you've worked 40 years. In Social Security, if you work, say, 40 years at $30,000, you'll get a lot lower benefit than if you work 30 years at $40,000. So I want to do a lot of things about the issue you raise. What I don't want to do is the equivalent of throwing money off a roof in a poor area of a city to help the poor. I don't want to basically give all these extra benefits to people who have sedentary jobs as a way of trying to deal with the people who work hard physically. I'd rather target the issue that you raise.
And does that also target, or would that include people, when you look at different ethnic groups in this country, some don't live as long as others because of health care, because of all kinds of issues. What do you do about that? How does that factor in?
Right. So there, usually when the issue of retirement age comes up, there are 3 or 4 very sympathetic groups that are raised as issues. One of them is the people who work hard physically. One of them are those who have shorter than average life expectancies. One of them are people who have lower than average incomes. And those are not the same groups, even though they're correlated. That is, if you have a lower than average income, you're more likely to have had a physical than a sedentary job, although that's not so true. You know, we have a lot of people with sedentary jobs who have very low incomes as well. So the complication is if you do something like, say, well, these people have some of these common elements, let's solve their problem by continually ratcheting down the number the number of years of support we give them in Social Security. So before we used to give them 13, 14, 15, let's give them 16, 17 years of retirement. Of course, they might have less than average and stuff like that. The problem is you're spending money on everybody. So you're spending people on you, Kathleen, with your sedentary job, and me with my sedentary job. It's saying, somehow or other, you've got to subsidize us to deal with these people. So the people who have shorter than average life expectancies, for instance, are often people who are on disability, so we need to have a strong disability system. They're also people who are paying tax rates. If I die at 62, for instance, because I have a shorter than average life expectancy, I don't get anything out of a system that has a higher tax rate. And I don't get anything, and I don't lose anything by the fact that the retirement age changed. Or if I'm somebody who works hard physically all my life, it seems to me the way to target that is to try to give some extra benefits for people who basically have these long work lives. And mm-hmm. as I say, if it's people with lower incomes, I would beef up minimum benefits and lifetime benefits. I just don't want to spend money very inefficiently by this rather crude method of trying to deal with the problems of these groups.
More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number. On the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program this Tuesday, Rick Sanchez, will be joining us. He's host of the 2 to 4 hours on CNN, and he has a new book, and it is titled Conventional Idiocy, Why the New America is Sick of Old Politics. Let's go to Jim next in Ocano Falls. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, you know, the middle class already pay on every check that they make for 12 months out of the year, up till, what is it, $80,000 or something like that. What would be wrong with eliminating the cap and let the people that can more afford to pay for the program just keep on paying Social Security right up until whatever they make, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $500,000, and keep paying the same rate right through?
All right. Eugene?
Well, Jim's making a suggestion for one of the reforms that many people think would be part of a reform package would be to raise the cap. It used to be that Social Security taxed about 90% of earnings of people, but that number has fallen over time as the income distribution has become more unequal and as more and more income has been earned by the very top earners. And I think that actually would be a part of reform. And I don't necessarily agree that I would remove it altogether. I think that creates a lot of problems, say, for small businesses and partnerships and groups where, in fact, it's hard to distinguish between capital income and wage income. And we don't set Social Security tax on income from our corporate capital, for instance. So I think there's a limit on how far you want to go in eliminating the cap, but I think that would be part of reform. So again, the question for me is, whatever the amount of revenues we raise, I still would rather have a system that's geared more to the older people, even if we raise these additional revenues that Jim wants.
What is the cap now? Is it $80,000?
I'm blanking. I think it's close to about $100,000 now.
Okay. Here's an email that's come in from John in Appleton. Full retirement should be moved to 75. People can still retire earlier than 75, but with reduced payments or benefits.
Well, I guess what I would say is if I have to do a benefit cut as part of Social Security reform, I would emphasize increasing the retirement age because I think it's the most progressive way of getting there because it allows people to adjust by working a little more when they're most capable of doing it. When they're in their 70s and 80s, it's a lot less likely that they'll be able to do it when they're 60s. You don't have to go as far as that suggestion. The issue for me, though, is interesting enough, is the full raising the full retirement age, and this is somewhat technical. If you don't change the early retirement age, that's basically nothing more than an across-the-board benefit cut. And I'm worried about the signal that we give to people that basically tells them that at age 62, they're eligible for old-age insurance. So the federal government is telling us we're old at 62. Now, maybe I'm getting old enough that I have a Freudian or psychological reason why I address this.
I understand.
But telling people that they're old at 62 in the year 2070, for instance, and we're talking about reform for the future, when they were told they were old at 65 in 1940, just doesn't make sense. So I think we've got to push on the what's called the early retirement age as well. This early retirement age of 62, and again, this is somewhat technical. Increasing the early retirement age doesn't actually cut lifetime benefits at all because Social Security gives you a bump up in benefits if you just delay your benefits.
Thank you, Gene, so much for being with us. We'll talk again. Oh, I just wanted to ask, where is this going? Are we going to see some kind of action on this soon, do you think, or is it just in perpetual discussion?
I don't know that the reform commissions will push that hard on the retirement age, quite honestly. I want to keep it on the table, as I say, because I think to the extent they do benefit cuts, I think it's the most progressive of anything they could do. But it is very likely, I think, that you will see a Social Security debate next year, which is going to evolve from a broader debate on the budget. They're going to look at the budget and they're going to say, what can we tackle? People are complaining about the deficit. Social Security's long run, so it doesn't have to affect you know, the stimulus. They're going to be scared to do health reform in the near future, even though that's where the big bucks are, and we've got to tackle it. So I think Social Security debate is going to be on the table very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen.
I guess the first half hour, Gene Sterley, Richard B. Fisher Chair and Institute Fellow at the Urban Institute, author of Retooling Social Security for the 21st Century. Keep your phone calls. Just stay on hold a little bit longer. We'll go back to them. We're just changing guests now. And our guest now is Teresa Gelarducci, Bernard and Irene Schwartz Chair of Economic Policy Analysis and also Director of the Schwartz Center for the New School for Social Research, and author of When I'm 64, The Plot Against Pensions and the Plan to Save Them. This is, some have said, a radical proposal for making sure that a rich nation can ensure a secure old age. We will be continuing to welcome phone calls as we talk more about restructuring the United States retirement income security system with Teresa, and welcome more of your phone calls at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Teresa, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
We've talked about raising the retirement age to 70, our first guest believes that we need to look more at making sure that we fund old age in this country and that it no longer is 65. You go a step further with your proposal. Could you outline, please, how you would restructure the retirement income security system in this country?
Oh, that's easy. So we need a retirement income structure that lets people retire after a long career of work. And that means that we need institutions that help people save for their retirement in a safe way that yields money at retirement. Now, that sounds really simple, but we don't have one of those now. We have a system where you save every once in a while, but if you need the money before retirement, you can take it out. And in the meantime, these are 401k systems, and in the meantime, you pay huge fees to make wrong decisions about where to invest it. So it just is the opposite of what we need. I propose that we have an extra tier of pensions on top of Social Security where people save money and get a guaranteed rate of return. It never falls below 3% plus inflation. So if the inflation's 3%, then you get paid 6%. If inflation's 0%, you get 3%. It never goes up to 12, but it never falls below 3% plus inflation. You get a guaranteed return on that money your whole career, and then when you retire, you get a check to supplement your Social Security. So it's really simple. You save more now in a safe way to get a decent, secure income when you retire.
Mm-hmm. And then you can retire when?
After about 35 to 40 years of work. So for most people, that's around 65. It is unconscionable in a country like ours that's so wealthy that we would even think about pushing the retirement age up to 70. The health statistics and the employment statistics do not warrant the conclusion that most people, or even over half people, can work until age 70. The jobs aren't there, and the health and ability is not there.
Well, that's an interesting point. The jobs aren't there. There's already age discrimination. It would be hard to imagine most places keeping people until they were 70 or 75.
Exactly. A way this is usually framed is that if lazy Americans would just work a little longer, then that's the entire solution. That's predicated on the assumptions that working longer is only the worker's choice and not actually the employer's choice or the customer's choice. That even goes beyond what's the right thing to do. It's just practically a non-starter of an idea.
Mm-hmm. How do you deal, though, with the fact that most people are living a whole lot longer than they were when this system was designed?
A lot of my scholarship is actually just looking at these patterns of longevity gains. It's true. 100 years ago, we didn't have penicillin. You know, 75 years ago, we didn't have the kinds of medical interventions we have. So, yes, we're keeping 65-year-olds alive longer than we did in the 1930s. But a lot of other things have changed, too, you know, surgery techniques and, you know, cars. So going back to the 30s as our benchmark about what we want in our society is makes no sense to me. Also, our longevity gains came really in the 70s and the 80s for men, when the smoking rates started going down and we started getting clean water, and actually Medicare passed so that older people were getting access to medical care. If you look at the last 10 years, there's been hardly any longevity gains among women. They are working more, and that stresses people out when they work more. I also have evidence to show that when people retire, their health improves. So the fact that we're living longer could be very much tied to the fact that we're able to retire. Get people not to retire, and these longevity gains will probably diminish.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, and they probably are already with obesity and the pressures of work.
Let's go to your phone calls. We have tons of people who want to chime in on this issue. Let's start with Mike from La Crosse for you. Hi, Mike. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, I'd like to bring another thing into the discussion, and that's a comparison to the railroad retirement system, which is fully funded. It's a federally mandated system. And about 5 or 8 years ago, we actually lowered the age. We were able to lower the age that you could collect full benefits after 30 years service from age 62 to age 60. So now someone who reaches age 60, that's a railroad employee, can retire at age 60 and receive their full retirement benefits.
Hmm.
And it's a federally mandated system. First of all, when it was first put into place, I can't remember how long ago, if it was in the 1800s, early 1900s, it was put in so that they could retire at age 65 and receive full benefits. The problem with that was the average age of death of a railroader was age 63 or 62. So most people never even received that retirement. But, of course, now we're at a point where the average railroader does receive some sort of a retirement. Mm-hmm. People who start at a very young age, 18, 20, actually end up working more than 30 years before they can retire that receive that full benefit at age 60. Others like myself who came into the system, I came in my 40s. I will be able to, I'll never receive the full benefit, but I'll be able to retire as early as age 62 with whatever time I've put in and get a adjusted benefit. Or if I make it, in my case, to age 64, when I'll have 20-year service, yeah, I'll get a increased benefit for 20-year service, but not the full 30-year benefit.
Mm-hmm. Teresa?
No, I think that. Thank you for that description. But that is a really good example of the hodgepodge of systems that we have out there. That every employer and industry has a different kind of a system, but it all is predicated on the idea that there should be he'll get a solid stream of income for the rest of his life from that system. What he's also saying is that because he's worked for different employers, he can't really add up. I'm sure that you've worked more than 20 years in your life, but you've worked for different employers, that you can't add up. And so we need a streamlined system so that people, wherever they're working, they can actually add to their occupation. But the railroad retirement system is a system that came in before Social Security, because actually non-union railroads were trying to cut the benefits of the older of the older legacy railroads. I mean, we're playing that out in the auto industry and playing that out in the transportation industry and in the airline industry today. So if we don't have a national system supplementing Social Security, you're going to have this hodgepodge of programs.
Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting email from Gary in Iron River. In addition to living longer, many people are entering the workforce later due to most completing high school and more going to higher education, so they're contributing fewer years. Find a way that your retirement age depends upon when you enter the workforce. If you get a four-year degree, mm-hmm, you retire at 69. Yep. If you go to work after high school at 65. If you have a six-year PhD, you retire at 71.
Please forward that email to me. That guy is so smart because I agree with him. So I think that we have to step back and And I think you're doing this on this show, is asking the question, well, how long should people have to work before they can retire? That's really the question, not whether it's 60, 65, 67. Because people at 65 are all really different kinds of ages. Some have been broken down by work. Some are really peppy because their career is just getting in stride because they didn't work until they were 40. Or they went to graduate school, and they went to medical school. Medical school is different, but law school. They kind of prolonged their schooling until they were about 30. So it really makes a difference. It's really not that we really get fixated on the age. We should really talk about how many years. So I picked a number, but you know, between 37 and 40 years of service is enough in a wealthy society. And every other economy that's an advanced market economy pays full benefits, has a decent retirement after 35 to 38 years of work. So that's a philosophical, it's not an economic question, right? That's a philosophical question.
Yes, it is.
Let's settle on a range and then build a system around that.
More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we're going to be talking about what people in America are sick of: money in politics. They are sick of people being given fluff for news. We'll talk about Joe the Plumber, Fidel Castro, Rush Limbaugh, and many others with Rick Sanchez, who anchors Rick's List weekdays on CNN, and he's author. His latest book is Conventional Idiocy: Why the New America is Sick of Old Politics. This hour, we're talking about Social Security, and the president has put together a commission to look at the retirement age and to look at Social Security. We're talking about whether or not, we're talking about many facets of this, but the retirement age should be at age 70. Would it help keep Social Security going for a longer period of time? We're living longer, so why not work longer? Or are we really looking at a philosophical issue here? Our guest this hour, or this half hour, is Teresa Gilarducci. She is director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis, and she is the author of When I'm 64, The Plot Against Pensions and the Plan to Save Them. All right, let's go to Pete from Osseo next. Hi, Pete.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I'm 39. I don't think Social Security is going to be around by the time I retire. I think it's an unconstitutional Ponzi scheme, and I'm wondering how you feel about people like me opting out of the system and just being left alone, keeping our money, and having the government stay out of our life. How do you feel about that? Would you support that?
Yeah. No. You need government in your life. But I can really understand your frustration at 39 in this economy, wondering where your retirement's going to come from. Social Security is a pretty good deal for you. It's not only just a pension system; it's also an insurance system. But I don't think you question that. You think you're actually wondering if the promises will be there when you retire. It has. All I can say is that it's an affordable structure. There's nothing in the system that would make it blow up. Like, I think Medicare is actually much more unsustainable, and I would worry more about that than I would Social Security. So you have to ask yourself, do you want to opt out of Medicare? That would be sort of more, that would be more consistent with your idea to get government out of your life. I don't think you want to do that. And I think Social Security will be around when you retire. And in a complex society that we live in, we actually do need these government programs, because the marketplace won't provide retirement or health care when you're older.
And we should talk a little bit, because we're hearing so many stories of people who have lost pensions completely,
right?
People who have had 401ks that have lost half their value. They're starting to climb again, but who knows what will happen down the road. It's a scary proposition.
Yeah, and one thing people haven't lost is their Social Security. And
right.
So the last 10 years, in the last 2 years, you've seen people, mainly their 401k plans, just not providing the income they thought. They thought it would provide 20%, and it's providing 5% of their income. And you're actually seeing the data that the share of Social Security income going to older people's budgets is actually rising, because that keeps up with inflation, and it's a stable income that doesn't fluctuate with financial markets. So if anything, I say this to the 39-year-old caller, Social Security has become more important in people's lives as the instability in sort of what individuals want to do for themselves is gotten worse.
Thanks, Pete, for the call. Diane in Milwaukee. Hi.
Good morning. I think people should stay at the age 65 for mm-hmm. retirement or even earlier. If more people would retire, there would be more jobs for the younger people.
Yeah.
The grandparents would be healthier and be able to help out their children, maybe even volunteer at school and keep crime down, keep literacy up. There's all kinds of benefits of having older people who are healthy out of the workforce because the wages, there'd be less people in the wage in the jobs pool, and wages would go up, and that Social Security payments would go up.
Diane, you make a really good point, and there are a lot of people are making that argument, especially the International Monetary Fund and the International Labor Organizations have said in this, the youth unemployment has been unprecedented in this global recession, and that would really help. So you're right on the jobs issue. In higher education, we're finding a lot of people hanging on to their jobs as professors, like in the sciences. And so the new PhDs that they have graduated don't have jobs. You know, so on this, you know, on every sort of level, we depended upon a pension system that let people retire. When that breaks down, then you actually have these ramifications among youth. But Diane also makes a really important point that I had to tease out of that's confirmed by the data that actually took me a lot of time to find this out, is that when people retire, especially women, their health improves. For men, their health doesn't deteriorate as much. Levels of depression and of just musculoskeletal issues, events slow down after retirement. People enjoy retirement and their health shows that. So there is something, I'll just go back to my previous point. If you raise the retirement age, it's very likely the longevity improvements will stop.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And another philosophical question, do older people have an obligation to step aside?
I think that's left up to the philosophers, but there is intergenerational responsibilities to each other. I think the older people have a responsibility to themselves, and that really is, and I feel very passionately about this, that at the end of our lives, we really do need time for ourselves to figure out what it all meant. It really is important. And working up until the day you die, if that's embedded in our policies, of course it happens to people, but if that's embedded in our policies, that's inhumane. I have an opinion about that. We need to give people some time in their lives to build their own narrative, and that may mean stepping in to help with grandchildren or to generate issues, you know, to be generative around other issues in their communities, or it's just to rest and reflect, you know, but it should be a time where you don't have to work at Starbucks.
Right. Okay.
Or Home Depot, right?
Or Walmart as a welcomer.
Yeah, right,
okay.
Right.
Let's go to Tom from River Falls. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Kathleen. Yeah, I wanted to correct some misleading statements that your former guest mentioned. First of all, in that 39-year-old caller about saying Social Security is a Ponzi scheme, so I guess life insurance and other insurance programs are a Ponzi scheme, right?
Right,
and
right.
And he probably wanted to privatize Social Security and let Wall Street get its paws on that money so that they can put into a true Ponzi scheme at Wall Street, right? But I wanted to say that it's an insurance program. It's not a retirement program. Mm-hmm. One-third of recipients are orphans, widows, disabled Americans. You know, it's millions of Americans that depend on this. And also your expert, the guy who wrote the book, Retooling Social Security, when you asked him what's the cap, he didn't even know what the cap was. He says, oh, I'm not sure. I think around 100 grand, and it's actually 106,000.
Right.
So he was off by 6 grand. So you would think an expert who's trying to change Social Security would actually have that number, you know, pretty accurate. And then he also mentioned that the middle class uses most of the government services, and therefore they should bear most you know, most of the burden, and that's not true. Corporations use most of the government services, like our court system to enforce contracts, our educational system to provide them with skilled workforce, our military that protects their property and their factories, our highway rail system. You know, I could go on and on. Institutes of health, you know, with R&D. So all of this, they use most of the commons, and therefore they should pick up most of the tax burden. And actually, they pay, I think right now, in the corporate tax burden is the lowest it's been since World War II in what they actually pay. Often you'll hear the right-wingers say, oh, the tax rates are the highest in the advanced world, but there's so many loopholes that what they actually do pay is amongst the lowest in the advanced economy. So I just wanted to correct all that misinformation because, you know, he was getting away with it.
Yeah. Thanks. Right. Social Security is a social safety net, and also in a complex modern society, you can't just live without the government. And corporations would be the first to admit that.
Thanks, Tom, for the call. Here's an email from Richard. If retirement age is raised, what happens to health care insurance? They drop you at 65. Also, what happens to Medicare enrollment? That goes up, too?
So if they raise the retirement age, Medicare will probably still be the major provider. But I think that's a good point. They're raising the retirement age in order to save Social Security money, even though it's not clear that it really does. Because if people just might collect higher benefits. But the real issue about the cost of older people in this country is not Social Security or when people stop working. It's actually how we pay for medical care. And we went a long way in making sure everybody's covered, no matter how old you are. But we still have a lot to do about controlling costs.
Yeah. Let's go next to Tim in Green Bay. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I think that Social Security was first designed as a safety net, so I'm wondering if what would happen to the funds if they just allowed the benefits to be like 50-25% above the poverty line. I wonder if they went across the board with that benefit, what would that do to the funds?
So that's a variant of this idea that we should really only give Social Security to kind of poor people or to people who really need it as a basic, you know, poverty program. And that is not a great idea because even the middle class actually need to have a lot more money for their retirement besides 25%. And they also need the insurance aspect, and we can afford it. So I don't think much of turning Social Security into a poverty program. There'll be a lot less support for it. It'll be a smaller program. It will really diminish it. And if you don't replace it with anything, and there's nobody suggesting that we replace Social Security with something for the middle class, then it'll just make everything worse. And you don't save very much money if you don't give money to wealthy people. Besides, it's also to make that argument, you would say, well, if you get in a car accident and you have auto insurance, but you're a millionaire, you shouldn't get any payout from your auto insurance. If you pay into an insurance system, you should get your entitled benefits no matter what your family income is.
Do you have a figure, or is this not a fair question? If you retire at age 65 and you're a single person, mm-hmm. how much money do you have to have stashed? Yeah.
Right. No, that's a very good question. So let's say you're just a middle-class single person. Will you grant me that, earned like $50,000 your year? Maybe you were married, maybe you weren't, but by the time you got to 65, you're single. And if you've been in the Social Security system all your life, you'll get a couple of maybe $1,500 per month. You probably need a source of income that will give you another $2,000, and that's assuming that you don't have any health care costs. You should probably have a defined benefit system that gives you that amount of money, or you should have about $400,000 stacked away.
I would imagine not too many people have that, Teresa.
No, only about not middle class people. They more and more older people still have a mortgage, and the average pension, if they have any at all, you know, many people come in with zero, have about $60,000. So we're falling really short. And people are trying to work. at 65, and they're not finding the jobs. The unemployment rate among the elderly people is the fastest climbing. It's not the highest, but it's the fastest growing unemployment rate among all the groups.
So how's your idea of guaranteed retirement accounts being received?
I think that it's one of the vice president's office said that it's one of the most comprehensive solutions, and it's really being viewed as a kind of a medium term, long term solution. And so I think there's a lot of support for that. We're still really struggling about how to stop poverty from increasing among older people in the next 5 or 6 years. I mean, that is still an issue. So we're going to see a lot of proposals. There's going to be a lot of debate about my proposal. There's going to be a lot of debate about improving Social Security, increasing Social Security. So I think that raising the retirement age proposals are going to fade, and we're going to hear a lot of demands to actually raise benefits for Social Security.
Mm.
And that's optimistic, but I'm hearing that now.
Yeah.
I have not heard that in the past 10 years, and I've heard it a lot in the last year.
Well, we have a lot of emails we didn't get to, so I'm going to put you on hold, and Chrissy will get your address, and then we'll send you all of those.
Great, and okay. I'm happy to respond
to
people. I'd be very happy to.
Well, terrific.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
So we'll get that. Thank you so much for being with us. Teresa Giarducci, our guest this half hour, she's Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Chair of Economic Policy Analysis and the Director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis at the New School for Social Research. If you had an email that you wanted to send her, put it on her Facebook, and then we'll just scoot those along to her after we're off the air. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we've already had a number of postings, so she'll respond to you. Good for her. Great. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this interesting hour. Chrissy Pease for on-air production. We'll return following the news.